Part 5, Careers as Profitable Sources of Pleasure. My First Steps in Career Choice. Abraham, how would you suggest that we know if we've actually chosen the right career? And how can we guarantee that we'll be successful at the career we've chosen?
What is your definition of career?
A career is like a life's work, an occupation that people could throw themselves into and put the best and the most of themselves into. And, of course, in most cases, people would also want to get a financial return on it.
What are you meaning by life's work?
Life's work? Some work that people would plan to spend the rest of their lives doing, like a job, a profession, a business, or a trade.
Are you telling us that it is a widespread belief or accepted desire of your culture to choose a career and expect to live happily ever after within one topic forevermore?
Well, long as I can remember, it has been traditionally so. Like, from the time I was very young, people began asking me what I was going to be when I grew up. It's interesting to me now to realize that even as a very young child, the adults around me had instilled a sense of urgency in me to choose some career. I remember watching the milkman when I was like about 2 or 3 years old, delivering the beautiful, delicious milk in glass bottles and thinking as I watched him drive away, that would be my choice for a career. And then I witnessed a policeman actually making my mother stop her car by running her off the road. And I was in such admiration of anyone who's able to get my mother to do anything that for a while, I decided I'd like to be a policeman. Oh, and then not long after that, I remember a doctor set my broken arm. Another boy and I had been wrestling and broke my arm. And I thought I'd like to be a doctor there for a while. And then I remember when our house caught fire, the idea of being a fireman seemed like the best idea. And even after becoming what many would consider to be an adult, I was still observing and considering the multitude of options from my ever-changing perspective. And so those around me were a bit disappointed that I kept moving from thing to thing rather than settling in on one thing for my life, work, or career.
Many people, as they hear this childhood story of the events of your life influencing your idea of what you wanted to be when you grow up, might call your ever-changing ideas childish or unrealistic. But we want to acknowledge you are always inspired from the events of your life. And when you allow yourself to follow the flow of those inspired ideas, your potential for a joyous experience is much greater than if you were to select your career based on other reasons that people use to justify their choices, such as family tradition or income potential. It's not surprising that so many have a difficult time deciding what they will do for the rest of their lives because you are multifaceted beings, and your dominant intent is to enjoy your absolute basis of freedom and in your quest for joyful experience to then experience expansion and growth. In other words, without a real perception of freedom, you will never be joyful, and without joy, you can't experience true expansion. So childish as it may seem to many, it's natural that your life inspires your next adventure and your next and your next. We encourage you to decide as early in life as possible that your dominant intent and reason for existence is to live happily ever after. That would be a very good career choice. To gravitate toward those activities and to embrace those desires that harmonize with your core intentions, which are freedom and growth and joy. Make a career of living a happy life rather than trying to find work that will produce enough money that you can do things with your money that will then make you happy. When feeling happy is of paramount importance to you, and what you do for a living makes you happy, you've found the best of all combinations. You can become very good at feeling good under all conditions. But when you become good at reaching for your vibrational balance first, and then attract circumstances and events to yourself from that happy place, your potential for sustained happiness is much greater.
What do you do for a living? Abraham, their culture still today, usually we call them primitive or savage, who seem to live in the moment without jobs. In other words, when they're hungry, they just catch a fish or find fruit in a tree.
Will they be listening to this?
Well, no, they won't.
What do you think is the basic category of people that will be hearing this?
Oh, people who believe it's essential to have some sort of income-producing job.
What do you believe is the predominant reason that people believe they should find a career early in life and then pursue it the rest of their lives?
Well, of course, I can't speak for everyone, but it seems to almost be a moral or ethical position that we should or ought to find work that produces money. In other words, it's considered to be inappropriate to receive money without giving something back for it or without being productive in some way.
You are right. Most people do feel a need to justify their existence through effort or work. And that is perhaps the reason why the first question that you ask one another upon meeting for the first time is, what do you do for a living?
I know. You know, for about 40 years, I earned my living by working about an hour and a half a day. And often people would voice like a sort of resentment that I should have such an income without putting out more time, which would usually evoke a justification from me as I would then explain how much energy I'd expended during that 90 minutes and how many years it took me to become good at what I did or how much driving I had to do to even begin my work. In other words, I always felt a need to justify that I was actually paying a fair price for what I was receiving.
When you are in vibrational alignment, which means that you're in alignment with the source within you and that your own desires and beliefs are in balance, you never feel a need to justify to another. Many people attempt to justify their behavior or ideas to others, but it's never a good idea to use the opinions of others as the guide that you're seeking alignment with rather than your own guidance system. Many people early on in your experience attempt to demand your compliance with their rules and opinions. But if you allow what they want to be central to the decisions that you make, you only get further and further out of alignment with who you really are and with the intentions that you were born with, as well as those that have evolved from the life experience you're living. You will never experience the deliciousness of feeling free until you release your desire to please others and replace it with your powerful intention to align with who you really are, to your source, by caring how you feel and choosing good-feeling thoughts that let you know you've found your alignment. When you sense that someone is disapproving of you or attacking you, it's a natural response to defend yourself. But the need to defend will quickly subside when you've trained yourself into alignment with your inner being, because all feelings of vulnerability will have been replaced with that sure-footed sense of who you really are. No matter what choices you make, there will always be someone who does not agree with those choices. But as you find your balance and maintain your alignment, most who are observing you will be more inclined to ask you what your secret to success is rather than criticizing you for being successful. And those who continue to criticize you would find no satisfaction in your justification, no matter how compelling your argument is. It is not your role to fix the feeling of lack within others. It is your role to keep yourself in balance. When you allow your society, or even one other person, to dictate to you what you should want or how you should behave, you'll lose your balance, because your sense of freedom, which is core to your very beingness, is challenged. When you pay attention to the way you feel, and you practice self-empowering thoughts that align with who you really are, you will offer an example of thriving that will be of tremendous value to those who have the benefit of observing you. You cannot get poor enough to help poor people thrive, or sick enough to help sick people get well. You only ever uplift from your position of strength and clarity and alignment.
The Law of Attraction and Career.
What is a primary reason for the desire for a career?
Well, I read a study done recently that concluded that what most people are looking for is prestige. In other words, if offered the choice of having a higher title as opposed to more money, most would choose the higher title.
Those who are seeking prestige have replaced their own guidance system with seeking approval from others. And that's a rather unfulfilling way to live, because the onlookers you're seeking to please do not sustain long-lasting attention upon you. That study is very likely accurate, because most people do care more about what others think about them than they do about how they personally feel. But there is no consistency in that form of guidance. Some people worry that if they selfishly consider what makes them happy above all other things, they will be uncaring and unfair to those around them. But we know the opposite is true. When you care about your alignment with Source, which is represented by the way you feel, and you work to maintain your connection, anyone who is then your object of attention receives benefit from your gaze. You cannot uplift another unless you're connected to the stream of well-being yourself. We understand that it can feel very good when others hold you as their object of attention, as they're feeling appreciation for you, because they are then doing exactly what we were just explaining to you. In their appreciation of you, they're connected to Source and showering it all over you. But to ask others to always be in alignment with Source and to always hold you as their object of attention so that you can be showered with the well-being they are providing is not practical, because you cannot control their connection and you will not always be their only object of attention. You do, however, have absolute control over your own connection to Source. And when your dominant intent is to maintain your connection while leaving others out of that equation, then you will be free of trying to please others, which you cannot consistently do, and you will be able to maintain a consistent connection and feeling of well-being. An interesting thing to note is those who care about how they feel, who consistently hold themselves in an attitude of good-feeling emotions, who are connected to Source and flowing positive thoughts outward toward whatever they're focused upon, are usually seen by others to be attractive, and they are often the recipients of much appreciation and approval. You just cannot get the approval you seek from the place of needing it or from the place of lack of it. An office with a wonderful window view or a parking place with your name on it or an impressive title attached to your name cannot fill the void caused by not being in alignment with who you really are. When you achieve that alignment, those things feel less important, but then, interestingly enough, they come anyway.
Filling my void through service. So, during my 20 years in a wide variety of positions in the entertainment industry, I really had a lot of fun. It required only a few hours of my time, and I had a lot of adventurous challenges because I had so many new experiences. And yet, I often told people that I felt like I was walking across the sands of life, but when I looked back, I wasn't leaving any tracks. In other words, I felt like I was bringing my audiences some temporary pleasure, but I wasn't leaving them with anything of permanent value. Do we all inherently have those drives to uplift others? Do they come from some other level of ourselves? Or do we just pick up those intentions to make other people feel better from others around us once we've been born into this physical environment?
You're born wanting to be of value, wanting to uplift. And you're born understanding that you have value. Most of that feeling of lack that you were describing was not about your not being able to provide lasting value to others, but because your thoughts were keeping you away from your own personal alignment. It works like this. When you are in alignment with who you really are, with your inner being or source, you cannot help but uplift those with whom you come into contact. And in that alignment, you do not notice so many others who are not in alignment. The law of attraction does not surround you with dissatisfied people when you are satisfied. And the law of attraction does not surround you with satisfied people when you're dissatisfied. You simply cannot compensate for your own misalignment by offering more time or energy or action. You cannot find ideas that are effective enough to make up the difference. Your value to those around you hinges upon only one thing, your personal alignment with Source. And the only thing that you have to give another is an example of that alignment, which they may observe and then desire and then work to achieve, but you cannot give it to them. The entertainment that you provided to your audiences was actually a much bigger gift than you were able to acknowledge at the time, for you were providing distraction from troubling things. And in the absence of your audience members' attention to their problems, they did achieve, in many cases, temporary alignment with Source. But you can't go with each of them, holding yourself as their only object of attention in order to maintain their good feeling. Everyone is responsible for the thoughts they think and the things that they choose as their objects of attention. All of you have, deep within you, an understanding that you're here as joyous creators, and you're always being called toward that fulfillment. But there is not a long list of requirements that you're expected to accomplish. Your intention was to let your physical environment inspire your never-ending ideas of expansion or desire, and then you intended to align with the source energy within you for the achievement of those ideas. In other words, you knew your desires would be born from your participation here, and then once the desire was alive within you, you could focus your thoughts until you accomplished a feeling of expectation, and then your desire would come to fruition. The primary role that others around you play in that equation for creation is they provide variety from which your desires are born. It was not your intention to measure your value against the value of others, but to be inspired to new ideas by the combination of things going on around you. Any comparison to others is only meant to inspire expanded desire. It was never intended as a means to diminish you or to discount your value. Your life is not about what you will do after work or on the weekend or after you retire. Your life is happening now, and it is really represented by how you're feeling now. If your work feels unpleasant or unfulfilling or hard, it is not because you're standing in the wrong place, but because your perspective is clouded by contradicted thought. You cannot have a happy ending to a journey that has not been pleasant along the way. The end absolutely does not justify the means. The means, or the path along the way, always brings about the essence of an identical ending.
Will my success uplift others? Abraham, my freedom has always been what was most important to me, so I've never been willing to give much of it up for money. I always said that I had very little interest in money because I wasn't willing to give up my freedom for it. But then, over time, that leaving no footprints in the sand feeling made me question if there wasn't really something more to life than just having fun. So, shortly after that awareness, I found the book Think and Grow Rich. And even though the idea of thinking or of growing rich was something that I would have denied having any interest in, the book got my attention. and I felt a strong draw toward it. I picked it up, and the hair actually stood up on my body as if I'd found something that would have some major meaning in my life. The book said, "Make a decision about what you want." It was a seemingly simple statement, but I felt the power of it in a strange and new way. So for the first time in my life, I consciously started making decisions about what I wanted and writing them down. I want to be self-employed. I want a business of my own. I want no place of business. I don't want my foot nailed to the floor. I want no employees. I don't want that kind of responsibility. What I want is freedom. I wanted to be able to control my income. I wanted to be mobile so I could travel or be anywhere that I wanted to be. I wanted my work to be something where every life I touched, I elevated in some way or just let people be where they were, but that no one would ever be diminished as a result of knowing me. People used to laugh when I'd tell them that. They'd say, "Oh, Jerry, you're such a dreamer. There's no such thing as that." And I said, "Well, there has to be." Emerson had said, "You wouldn't have the desire if you didn't have the ability to achieve it." And I believed that. And so I really expected somewhere along the line opportunities to show up. And so within about 30 days of my clarifying what I wanted, I met a man who showed me a business that I could take to California and start, and that answered everything I was asking for. And so for the next years of my life, that business really took hold. And again, it fulfilled the essence of everything that I'd written down that I wanted. I want freedom, growth, and joy. I didn't say it had to be something I was capable of doing, or that I had the talent or the ability or the intelligence for. I just said, "This is what I want." Now, can any of us have that? Can any of us have whatever we want once we clarify what it is we want?
Yes. If this life experience has inspired the desire within you, this life experience has the wherewithal to fulfill it down to the very last detail. You had been coming to those decisions about what you wanted over a long period of time because of the life experiences that you had been living. Your decision point of focusing upon those decisions and writing them down in a comprehensive manner caused an emphasizing of your belief regarding them. And when your desires and beliefs come together, expectation occurs. And once expectation for anything is within you, it then comes quickly into your experience. Being free was the most important element in the desires that you had held for some time. And when you saw something that you believed would not threaten your desire for freedom, but had the potential of bringing income, you then allowed your desire for more income to expand, where previously anything that you perceived as having the potential to dampen your freedom, you repelled immediately. You were all born with a triad of intentions pulsing within you: freedom, growth, and joy. Freedom is the basis of that which you are, because everything that comes to you comes in response to the thoughts you think, and no one has control over the thoughts that you think other than you. When joy is your dominant quest, so that you gently train your thoughts into alignment with who you really are, all resistance subsides. And then you allow the expansion or growth that your life experience has inspired within you.
I want my life to feel good.
When choosing a career or when doing the things that your work currently requires, if your dominant intent is to feel joy while you're doing the work, your triad of intentions will come quickly and easily into alignment, because in your accomplishment of feeling good, you come into complete alignment with the broader non-physical aspects of your being. That alignment then allows the expansion toward all of the things that your life has helped you to identify that you want, so your growth becomes swift and satisfying. Freedom is the basis of your life experience. It's not something that you have to earn. Joy is your objective, and growth is the result of all of that. But if you believe that you are unworthy and you set out to prove worthiness through action, you cannot find your balance. Often we explain this perfect triad of intentions of freedom and growth and joy. But most physical beings then turn their attention immediately to the idea of growth in their misguided attempt of proving worthiness, worthiness that has never been in question. You have nothing to prove to anyone and nothing to justify. Your reason for existence needs no justification, for your very existence is justification enough.
I create my own joyous career.
We would like you to see your career as one of creating a joyful life experience. You're not a creator of things or a regurgitator of what someone else has created or a gatherer of stuff. You are a creator. And the subject of your creation is your joyful life experience. That is your mission. That's your quest. That is why you are here.
That's wonderful. Is it immoral to get without giving? Abraham, would you say that it would be morally or ethically correct for people to never give back after they'd received so much? In other words, if they just lived on inherited money or money they'd won, like the lottery, or lived off of welfare or donated money, would you say that that could be appropriate for all of us?
Your question still implies that there's a price to pay for the well-being that flows to you, and that some sort of action is required to justify the flowing of the well-being, and that's not the case. It's not necessary or possible to justify the well-being that flows to you, but it is necessary to align with the well-being. You cannot focus upon lack of well-being and allow well-being into your experience. Many people focus upon unwanted things with no deliberate attention to the emotional guidance within them, and then they try to compensate for their lackful thinking with physical action. And because of the misalignment of energy, they don't get the results from their action, so then they try harder, offering more action, but still things don't improve. Like the air you breathe, abundance in all things is available to you. Your life will simply be as good as you allow it to be. If you believe that you must work hard for the abundance that comes to you, then it cannot come without hard work. But in so many cases, the harder you work, the worse you feel, and the worse you feel, the more you disallow the results that you wanted to receive from your hard work. It's no wonder so many people are discouraged and do not know which way to turn, because it seems that no matter what they do, they don't thrive. Appreciation and love and alignment to that which is source is the ultimate giving back, so to speak. In your pain or struggle, you have nothing to give back. Many complain of unfairness or injustice when they see some people receiving greatly but offering seemingly little effort, while others who work very hard often show very little success. But the law of attraction is always consistently just. What you're living is always an exact replication of your vibrational patterns of thought. Nothing could be more fair than life as you are living it, because as you are thinking, you are vibrating, and as you are vibrating, you are attracting. And so you always get back the essence of what you're giving.
So if we take money out of the equation, so to speak, then if we're not doing for the sake of money, what should we be doing with our life?
What most people are doing with most of their lives is offering action to try to compensate for vibrational imbalance. In other words, they think so much of things they do not want, and in doing so, they prevent what they do want from easily flowing into their experience, and then they try to compensate for the misalignment through action. If you attend to your vibrational alignment first, by recognizing the value of your emotions and trying to focus upon things that feel good, you would benefit tremendously by that alignment, and wonderful things would flow to you with far less action. The majority of action that is offered today is offered amidst tremendous vibrational resistance, and that is the reason why so many people have come to believe that life is a struggle. It's also the reason why many, like you, believe that success and freedom are at odds with one another, when in reality they are actually synonymous. It's not necessary to take money out of the equation, but it is necessary that you make your quest for joy be the most dominant part of your equation. When you do that, abundance in all manner will flow to you.
Welcome to planet Earth.
If we were talking to you on your first day of physical experience, we could be of great advantage to you, because we would say, "Welcome to planet Earth. There is nothing that you cannot be or do or have. And your work here, your lifetime career, is to seek joy. You live in a universe of absolute freedom. You are so free that every thought you think will attract unto you. As you think thoughts that feel good to you, you will be in harmony with who you really are. And so utilize your profound freedom. Seek joy first, and all of the growth that you could ever imagine will come joyously and abundantly unto you." But this is not the first day of your life experience. In most cases, you're hearing this long after you've been convinced that you're not free and that you're unworthy and that you must prove through your action that you are worthy of receiving. Many of you are currently involved in careers or work that you do not find pleasing, but you feel that you cannot just walk away because the financial repercussions would cause even greater discomfort than what you're already experiencing. Many others who do not currently have work that is producing income feel the discomfort of having no means of support or no promise of future security. But no matter where you're currently standing, if you will make a decision to look at the positive aspects of where you are right now, you will stop the offering of resistance, which is the only thing that's holding you apart from what you desire. You don't have to go back and undo anything or beat up on yourself for what you've not yet accomplished. If you could, in essence, regard this moment as the beginning of your life experience, doing your best to resist the bad feeling, resistant thoughts of unworthiness or resentment that often surround the subject of money, your financial picture would begin to change right now. You only have to say, "Here I am on the first day of the rest of my physical life experience, and it is my dominant intent from this moment forward to look for reasons to feel good. I want to feel good. Nothing is more important to me than that I feel good."
Most important is feeling good.
Often there are things in your work environment that are not conducive to feeling good, and often you believe that your only chance of ever really feeling good is to get away from those negative influences. But the idea of quitting and leaving does not feel good either, because that could cause a lapse in your income when things are already financially tight. So you continue on, unhappy and feeling trapped. If you could stand back a little bit and see your career not as work that you're doing in exchange for money, but as the expenditure of your life experience in return for your joyful experience, then you would realize that many of the thoughts that you think and the words that you speak are not in alignment with that quest for joy. If you'll say, "Nothing is more important than that I feel good," you will find yourself guiding yourself to different thoughts, words, and behaviors. The simple exercise of deliberately looking for positive aspects of your current work and the people who work there with you will give you an immediate feeling of relief. And that relief will indicate a shift in your vibration, which means your point of attraction has shifted. Once that occurs, the law of attraction will cause you to rendezvous with different people and even cause you to have different experiences with the same people. It is a sort of creating from the inside out rather than the outside-in action version that never works. From your simple but powerful premise of deciding that you want to feel good, things will begin to improve in dramatic ways.
What is holding back my career? Abraham, what would you say to those who are moving toward their first field of employment or making a career change and are considering things like income or growth potential, product or service demand, and so forth? What would you say to them in trying to decide what direction for them to take?
The life you have already lived has caused you to determine the details of the experience you're looking for, and the perfect situation is already lined up for you. Your work right now is not to get out there and find the perfect set of circumstances, but instead to allow the unfolding of circumstances that will lead you right to a position that satisfies the myriad of intentions that you've come to through your life experience. In other words, you never know more clearly what it is you do want than when you're living what you don't want. So not having enough money causes you to ask for more money. An unappreciative employer makes you ask for someone who appreciates your talent and willingness. A job that asks very little from you causes you to desire something that inspires more clarity and expansion through you. A job that requires a long commute in traffic gives birth to a desire for work that is closer to where you live, and so on. We'd like to convey to anyone looking for a change in their work environment, it's already queued up for you in a sort of vibrational escrow. Your work is to align with what your past and current experiences have helped you to identify that you want. It may sound strange, but the fastest way to an improved work environment is to look for things in your current environment that make you feel good. Most people do exactly the opposite, by pointing out the flaws where they stand in an effort to justify an improved environment. But since the law of attraction always gives you more of whatever you're giving your attention to, if your attention is upon unwanted things, then more unwanted things are on the way as well. When you leave one situation because of the unwanted things that are present, you find the essence of the same unwanted things in your next environment as well. Think and speak of what you do want. Make lists of things that are pleasant about where you are. Think excitedly about the improvements that are on the way to you. De-emphasize what you don't like and emphasize what you do like, and then observe the universe's response to your improved vibration.
I'll seek reasons to feel good. So, in other words, unless people now focus on what they do want and get their focus off what they don't want in their current or previous position, they'll just continue to, in some form, recreate a negative situation?
That's absolutely correct. No matter how justified you are in your negative emotion, you're still messing up your future. Most of you have given enough thought to what you want to keep you happily busy for 10 or 20 lifetimes, but your manifestations can't get to you because your door is closed. And the reason that your door is closed is because you're so busy complaining about what is, or busy defending where you now stand. Look for reasons to feel good, and in your joy, you open the door. And as you open your door, all of these things that you've said, I want, can then flow in. And it is our expectation that under those conditions, you will live happily ever after, which after all is that which you have truly intended as you've come forth into this career of physical life experience.
Do I want to, or do I have to? Abraham, through my early years, while we lived on a series of 40-acre farms in Oklahoma, Missouri, and Arkansas, I did many different things to earn money. All of them very hard work, and none of them fun. From picking berries to raising and selling chickens to planting, harvesting, and selling tomatoes, chopping and selling firewood, I earned quite a bit of money for those times, but I didn't enjoy my work at all. And then during my high school years in New Orleans, I worked at another series of non-fun jobs as a roofer, a sheet metal mechanic, and an elevator operator. The first job I had that was any fun at all was being a lifeguard at Pontchartrain Beach. I guess I was like most others around me, and it didn't occur to me that fun and earning money could coincide. But during the time that I was doing all of that not fun, very hard work, I was doing fun things after work. I got together with other kids in the park at night and played my guitar, and I sang at church and in the choir with the New Orleans Opera Association. I led a Cub Scout group and performed acrobatics and volunteered as a teacher of gymnastics and dance. I did many wonderful fun things, but I didn't earn money from any of them. However, once I became an adult, I never again worked very long at anything I didn't enjoy. Instead, I became self-employed, and those things that I'd been doing free for fun, I just kept doing, but then I started receiving money in return for performing them. I hadn't been training for or planning for a career in music or singing or dancing or acrobatics. But then the sheet metal workers' union called a strike, and while I was out of work, a man down at the YMCA gym asked me to join. It was called El Gran Circo de Santos y Artigas in Cuba. It was a circus down there, as an aerial bar performer. It was called an artista. And so I didn't go into the secure direction in roofing and sheet metal that my father wanted me to plan for. It paid a steady wage, and I was trained for it and was very good at it, even though I disliked so much about it. But as a result of the unwanted union strike, I turned easily in the direction of what then became a truly joyous life of adventure and earnings. I began as an acrobat with that Cuban circus, and then I stayed in show business in one aspect of another for another 20 years.
Hear how the details of your life clearly demonstrate the things we've been offering here. Do you see how those early years of working so hard at things you did not enjoy helped you to not only identify what you did not want, but also helped you to determine what you did prefer? And even though you were working as a teenager, still at the things that you did not enjoy doing, you were spending a great deal of your time, every spare minute really, doing things that you really did like very much to do. So the two parts of your equation for joyful creation were in place. The hard work caused you to ask. Your time playing music and doing the gymnastics and such that you loved put you in a chronic place of allowing. And then, through the path of least resistance, the universe delivered to you a viable path to get to the freedom, growth, and joy that you wanted. Because of the intense unpleasantness of those early years of very hard work, you were one of the few who was strange enough or weird enough or different enough to allow yourself to seek your bliss. And that led to many things that you had come to desire. Most people feel a stark difference between the things that they want to do and the things that they believe they have to do. And most put anything that earns money in the category of the things that I have to do. That's why the money often comes so hard, and that's why there's usually not enough of it. If you're wise enough to follow the trail of good-feeling thoughts, you will discover that that blissful path will lead you to all things that you desire. By deliberately looking for positive aspects along your way, you will come into vibrational alignment with who you really are and with the things you really want. And once you do that, the universe must deliver to you a viable means to achieve your desires.
What if my pleasure attracts money? Well, for example, Esther and I had no intention of receiving income from our work with you, Abraham. We were really enjoying learning from you. And we were thrilled by the positive results we were personally receiving as we applied what we were learning. But it was never our intention for our work with you to become a business. It was an enlightening experience of just plain fun, and it still is fun, but now it's expanded dramatically into a worldwide enterprise.
So are you saying that as your life experience expanded, your ideas and desires expanded also?
Yes.
And even though in the beginning you were not able to see or describe the details of how things would unfold, because it was fun and because you felt good, this became a powerful avenue to fulfill desires and goals that had been in place long before you met us or began this work.
That's right. My original intention in visiting with you was to learn a more effective way to help others to become more financially successful. And also, I wanted to learn how to live our lives more in harmony with the natural laws of the universe, whatever they were. I want my work to feel free. So most of what you might call my careers through the years almost never began as a means to earn money. They've mostly been things that I just enjoyed doing, which ended up earning money.
Well, that truly is the secret to success that you've enjoyed for so many years. Because you determined early on that feeling good was what mattered most to you, you managed to find a variety of interesting ways to maintain that intention, not realizing at the time that the secret to all success is keeping yourself happy. Many of you have been taught that your own happiness is a selfish and inappropriate quest, and that your real objectives should revolve around commitment and responsibility and struggle and sacrifice. But we want you to understand that you can be committed and responsible and an uplifter and happy. In fact, unless you do find a way of connecting to your true happiness, all of those other quests are usually just empty, hollow words not backed up by any true value. You only ever uplift from your position of connection and strength. People often say, "I don't want to work," meaning, "I don't want to go someplace where I have to do unwanted things to earn money." And when we ask why, they usually say, "Because I want to be free." But it's not freedom from action that you're looking for, because action can be fun. And it's not freedom from money that you want, because money and freedom are synonymous. You're seeking freedom from negativity, from resistance, from disallowance of who you really are. You're seeking freedom from the disallowance of the abundance that is your birthright. You're seeking freedom from lack.
What are its positive aspects?
Whenever you feel negative emotion, that's your emotional guidance system giving you an indication that you are, in that moment, looking at negative aspects of something. And in doing so, you're depriving yourself of something wanted. If you will set an intention to look for positive aspects in whatever you're giving your attention to, you will begin to immediately see the evidence of the lifting of patterns of resistance as the universe is then allowed by your shift in vibration to deliver your long-wanted desires to you. People often move from job to job, profession to profession, employer to employer, only to find the next place no better than the last. And the reason for that is they take themselves everywhere they go. When you go to a new place and you continue to complain about what was wrong with your last position in order to explain why you came to the new position, the same vibrational mix of resistance goes with you and continues to prevent the things you want from coming to you. The best way to accomplish an improved work environment is to focus upon the best things about where you currently are until you flood your own vibrational patterns of thought with appreciation. And in that changed vibration, you can then allow the new and improved conditions and circumstances to come into your experience. Some worry that if they follow our encouragement to look for good things about where they are, that it will only hold them longer in an unwanted place. But the opposite is really true. In your state of appreciation, you lift all self-imposed limitations, and all limitations are self-imposed, and you free yourself for the receiving of wonderful things.
Abraham, what's the role of appreciation in the creation equation? And how does a condition of appreciation equate to what's called the attitude of gratitude? From Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich, I learned to decide what I wanted and then to focus on it or think about it till it came into being. In other words, I set goals and timetables for their achievement. But then, after meeting you, I became aware that most of what I would describe as the most wonderful things that came into my life weren't so much things that I'd specified that I'd wanted, although much of that came to pass also. What actually manifested was the essence of something that I had greatly appreciated. In other words, I knew Esther for years before we actually came together. And I never wanted her through those years, but I did greatly appreciate so many aspects of who she was. And then she and all of her delightful aspects came completely into my life. And look at what a magnificent difference she's made in the joyous aspects of my life. Also, I read the Seth books, S-E-T-H. I read the Seth books over and over and never desired to have a Seth in my life. But I greatly appreciated the teachings of that non-physical entity named Seth, as well as Jane Roberts and Robert Butts, who facilitated that experience. And now, here you are, not Seth per se, but you bring with you the essence of everything that I appreciated so much about Jane and Rob and Seth's phenomenal metaphysical experience. Another example. Over 40 years ago, I was visiting a family near San Francisco who earned their money from a very basic, almost primitive, mail-order lapidary business that they conducted from their home. Now, I never ever said I wanted that business, but in my appreciation, I told thousands of people the story of that experience. And then one day, about 20 years ago, I was at the post office picking up some orders for some Teachings of Abraham recordings, and I realized that I was now experiencing the essence of that mail order business that I had so much appreciated. And now look at how many millions and millions of people have been positively touched as a result of the business aspect of disseminating this philosophy. I could list many more, but I'll add one more scenario. Esther and I, when we first moved to San Antonio, Texas, found a small temporary rental house where we could enjoy a vegetable garden, laying hens, a milk goat, and our own water well. And we used to take our walks by crossing the road in front of the house and then walking across a small airplane landing strip into a grove of large cedar and live oak trees. Even in the heat of the summer, we were able to enjoy our walks by following the deer trails that tunneled through the dense growth of trees. One day, we discovered that one of the deer trails opened into a tiny meadow hidden among the oaks. It was so beautiful. The grass and the flowers and the general atmosphere would be best described as enchanting. Esther and I loved that good feeling spot in the woods, and we returned there many times. We even conjured scenarios of how this seemingly ancient, seemingly natural clearing could have come about, and who might have discovered it and enjoyed it before us. We questioned why it was so inexplicably pleasing to us, and we appreciated it greatly. We never said that we wanted that piece of land, but we purely appreciated it. And then, about 5 or 6 years later, a stranger called us and said he had heard that we were looking for land to build our office complex on, and the 7 acres that he offered us contained that small, hidden meadow. And now our office sits exactly on that beautiful, enchanting spot. That 7 acres became part of 20. And then one day I was appreciating the beautiful oak trees on our neighbor's prime 20 acres. And to make a long, delightful story relatively short, that little meadow has now evolved to 40 prime acres with interstate frontage, with a plane hangar, a helicopter pad, and a stable. We don't even have a plane or horses. And it all evolved from our appreciation of that small meadow in the woods. Abraham, would you please respond to my perspective regarding the emotion of appreciation?
The vibration of true love, that feeling of being in love, that feeling that you have sometimes when you see someone and you feel like you're moving through one another, the feeling that you have when you're looking at the innocence of a child and feeling the beauty and the power of that child. Love and appreciation are identical vibrations. Appreciation is the vibration of alignment with who you are. It's the absence of resistance. It's the absence of doubt and fear. Is the absence of self-denial or hatred toward others. Appreciation is the absence of everything that feels bad and the presence of everything that feels good. When you focus upon what you want, when you tell the story of how you want your life to be, you'll come closer and closer to the vicinity of appreciation, and when you reach it, it will pull you toward all things that you consider to be good in a very powerful way. Conversely, let's talk about the difference between gratitude and appreciation. Many people use those words interchangeably, but we do not feel the same vibrational essence in them at all. Because when you feel gratitude, often you're looking at the struggle that you've overcome. In other words, you're happy that you're still not in the struggle, but there's still some of that struggle vibration present. In other words, the difference between inspiration, which is being called to who you are, and motivation, which is trying to make yourself go somewhere, is a similar difference. Appreciation is that tuned in, tapped in, turned on feeling. Appreciation is vibrational alignment with who I have become. The state of appreciation is me being in sync with the whole of that which I am. Being in the state of appreciation is seeing whatever you're looking at through the eyes of Source. And when you are in that state of appreciation, you could walk down a crowded street with all kinds of things that a lot of other people would find reason to criticize or worry about, and you would not have access to them because your vibration of appreciation is picking out for you things of a different vibrational nature. A state of appreciation is a state of godliness. A state of appreciation is being who you really are. A state of appreciation is who you were the day you were born and who you will be in the moment you die. And it would be, if we were standing in your physical shoes, our question every moment. Your friend Joseph Campbell used the word bliss, and we think it's equal. Follow your bliss. But sometimes you cannot get a whiff of bliss from where you are. So we say, if you're in despair, follow your revenge. It's downstream. It's the right direction. If you're in revenge, follow your hatred. It's downstream. It's in the right direction. If you're in hatred, follow your anger. It's downstream. If you're in anger, follow your frustration. It's downstream. If you're in frustration, follow your hope. It's downstream. If you're in hope, now you're in the vicinity of appreciation. Once you get into the vibration of hope, now begin making lists of things you feel good about. Fill your notebooks full of them. Make lists of positive aspects. Make lists of things you love. Go to the restaurant and look for your favorite things and never complain about anything. Look for things that you like the best. Even if there's only one thing in all of that that you like, give it your undivided attention and use it as your excuse to be who you are. And as you use those things that shine bright and make you feel good as your excuse to give your attention and be who you are, you will tune to who you are, and the whole world will begin to transform before your eyes. It's not your job to transform the world for others, but it is your job to transform it for you. A state of appreciation is pure connection to Source, where there is no perception of lack. In the same way that many people are focused upon a shortage of money, there are also many who are focused upon a shortage of time. And often these two lackful subjects are intertwined to negatively impact one another. Usually the reason for this detrimental coupling of lackful subjects is the feeling that there's just not enough time to do what's necessary to achieve success. The primary reason that people feel a shortage of time is because they're trying to get too much leverage out of their action. If you are unaware of the power of alignment and are making little or no effort at finding your personal alignment, if you're overwhelmed or angry or resentful or ornery, and from those emotional perspectives you're then offering your action to try to accomplish things, you're very likely experiencing a severe shortage of time. There simply is not enough action in the world to compensate for the misalignment of energy. But when you care about how you feel and you tend to your vibrational balance first, then you experience what feels like a cooperative universe that seems to open doors for you everywhere. The physical effort required of someone who is in alignment is a fraction of that required to someone who is not. The results experienced by someone who is in alignment are tremendous in comparison with the results experienced by someone who is not. If you're feeling a shortage of time or money, your best effort would be to focus upon better feeling thoughts, to make long lists of positive aspects, to look for reasons to feel good, and to do more things that make you feel good when you do them. Taking the time to feel better, to find positive aspects, to align with who you really are, will net you tremendous results and help you balance your time much more effectively. Shortage of time is not your problem. Shortage of money is not your problem. Shortage of connection to the energy that creates worlds is what is at the heart of all sensations of shortage that you are experiencing. Those voids or shortages can be filled with only one thing, connection to Source and alignment with who you really are. Your time is a perceptual thing, and even though the clock is ticking the same for everyone, your alignment affects your perception as well as the results that you allow. When you set time aside to envision your life as you want it to be, you access a power that is unavailable to you when you focus upon the problems of your life. As you observe the enormous differences in the effort that people apply and the results they achieve, you have to conclude that there is more to the equation of achieving than action alone. The difference is that some receive the benefit of the leverage of alignment because of the thoughts they think, while others disallow the leverage because of the thoughts they think. Imagine yourself running 1 mile, and in this mile there are 2,000 doors to move through. Imagine coming to each door and then having to personally open it before you can run through it. Now imagine running the mile, and as you approach each door, the door is open for you, so you're able to continue the pace, slowing not at all upon approaching each door. When you are in alignment with the energy that creates worlds, you no longer have to stop and open the doors. Your energy alignment allows things to line up for you. And the action that you offer is the way you enjoy the benefit of the alignment that you've accomplished.
Should I try to work harder?
You are a powerful creator who came into this leading-edge environment understanding that you create through the power of your thought by deliberately directing your focus toward things you want. You did not intend to rely on your action for that creation. It may take some time to adjust to the understanding that you are creating through your thoughts, not through your action, but we cannot overstate the value of thinking and speaking of things as you would like them to be rather than as they are. Once you not only understand the power of your thought, but you deliberately direct this powerful tool in the direction of things that you desire, then you will discover that the action part of your life is the way that you enjoy what you've created through your thought. When you achieve vibrational alignment, which means your thoughts are pleasing you as you think them, and you feel an inspiration to act, you've accomplished the best of both worlds. Your action feels effortless when you are tuned into the vibrational frequency of Source, and then you feel an inspiration to offer action. Those outcomes are always pleasing. But action taken without tending to vibrational alignment first is hardworking, inefficient action that over time wears you down. Most are so busy dealing with that which is immediate that they don't have time to tend to that which is important. Many tell us that they're so busy making their money that they don't have time to enjoy it. For when you rely on your action to create, often you're too tired to enjoy your creation.
Abraham, a lady posed a question to you. It was something to the effect, she said, "My work's an adventure, and I really do enjoy it. But when I tie money and earnings to my work, I can feel a tension that then takes the joy out of it. Do they not go well together?" What would your response to her be?
This is a common story that we hear from creative people who are involved in music or art that they love. But when they decide to make this thing that they love the primary source of their income, not only do they often struggle in making enough money, but their previous joy is diminished as well. Most people have a rather negative attitude about money, simply because most people speak more often of what they cannot afford or the lack of the money they desire than they speak of the benefit of money. Also, most people spend more time thinking about what is currently happening in their experience rather than what they would prefer to happen. And so without meaning to, most people are thinking rather lackfully about money. So then, when you couple an idea of something that you enjoy, your adventure, your music, your art, with something that you've felt strong lack about for a long time, like money, the balance of your thought tips toward the dominant feeling. As you begin spending more time visualizing what you desire and less time observing what is, and as you begin to practice your more positive, better-feeling story, in time, your adventure will become the dominant vibration within you. And then as you couple your adventure with your means of earning, the two will blend perfectly and enhance each other. There is no better way to earn money than to do things that you love to do. Money can flow into your experience through endless avenues. It's not the choice of the craft or avenue that limits the money that flows, but the attitude toward the money. That's why so many niche markets are continually opening, with people becoming very wealthy from ideas that only recently were not viable markets at all. You are the creator of your own reality, and you are the creator of your own markets of enterprise and your own flow of money. You cannot accurately define some activities as hard and others as easy, because all things that are in harmony with what you are wanting are easy and flowing, while all things that are not in harmony with what you are wanting are harder and more resistant. Any time what you're doing feels like a struggle, you must understand that your contradictory thought is introducing resistance into the equation. Resistance is caused by thinking about what you do not want, and that's what makes you tired.
An example of my old story about my career.
Here's an example of your old story about your career. I've always worked hard in every job I've had, but I've never really been appreciated. Seems to me that employers always take advantage of me, getting everything from me that they can and giving as little in return as they can get away with. I'm tired of working so hard for so little. I'm going to start holding back, too. No point in my knocking myself out when no one else notices. Many of the people around me at work know less than I know, work less than I work, and make more money than I make. That's just not right.
An example of my new story about my career.
Here's an example of a new story about your career. I know that I will not always be right here in this place doing this same work. I like understanding that things are always evolving, and it's fun to anticipate where I'm headed. While there are many things that could be better where I am, it's not really a problem because where I am is constantly changing to something better. I like knowing that as I look for the best things around me where I am, those things become more prevalent in my experience. It's fun to know that things are always working out for me. I like looking for the evidence of that, and I see more evidence of it every day. Remember, there's no right or wrong way to tell your improved story. It can be about your past, or your present, or your future experiences. The only criterion that is important is that you be conscious of your intent to tell a better-feeling, improved version of your story. By telling many good-feeling short stories throughout your day, you will change your point of attraction.
Time to tell a new story.
For many of you, your old story has been about things that have gone wrong, things that aren't the way you want them to be or think they should be, others who have let you down, others who have not been truthful with you. Your old story has been about not enough money or not enough time or how things usually are. Your old story has been about how things have been all of your life or how things have been lately. It's been about the injustices that you see in the world or others who don't understand. Your story has been about others who don't make an effort or others who are capable but don't apply themselves. Your story has been about dissatisfaction with your appearance or worry about your body's health or about people who take advantage of others or about people who want to control you. But start telling a new story. Let your new story be about the positive aspects of wherever you are. Let it be about the way you want things to be. Tell the story of how well things are going, how law of attraction is the true manager of all things. Tell the story about the abundance that flows abundantly, how time and perception is endless. Tell your story about the best things that you see. Let your new story be about your favorite memories. Talk about obvious expansion in your life. Talk about the amazing or interesting or wonderful aspects of your world. Talk about the incredible variety that surrounds you. Talk about the willingness and the effectiveness of others. Talk about the power of your own thoughts. Tell the story of the positive aspects of your body. Talk about the stable basis of your body. Tell the story about how we all create our own reality. Let your new story be about your absolute freedom and your joyous awareness of it. Each and every component that makes up your life experience is drawn to you by the powerful law of attraction's response to the thoughts you think and the story you tell about your life. Your money and financial assets, your body state of wellness, clarity, flexibility, size and shape, your work environment, how you're treated, your work satisfaction and rewards, indeed the very happiness of your life experience in general is all because of the story that you tell. If you will let your dominant intention be to revise and improve the content of the story you tell every day of your life, it is our absolute promise to you that your life will become that ever-improving story, for by the powerful law of attraction, it must be.
About the authors. Excited about the clarity and practicality of the translated information from the beings who call themselves Abraham, Jerry and Esther Hicks began disclosing their amazing Abraham experience to a handful of close business associates in 1986. Recognizing the practical results being received by themselves and by those people who were asking meaningful questions regarding the application of the principles of the law of attraction to finances, bodily conditions, and relationships, and then successfully applying Abraham's answers to their own situations, Jerry and Esther made a deliberate decision to allow Abraham's teachings to become available to an ever-widening circle of seekers of answers to how to live a better life. Using their San Antonio, Texas Conference Center as their base, Esther and Jerry have traveled to approximately 50 cities a year since 1989, presenting a series of interactive Law of Attraction workshops to those leaders who have gathered to participate in this progressive stream of thought. And although worldwide attention has been given to this philosophy of well-being by leading-edge thinkers and teachers who have in turn incorporated many of Abraham's concepts into their best-selling books, scripts, lectures, films, and so forth, the primary spread of this material has been from person to person, as individuals begin to discover the value of this form of practical spirituality in their personal life experiences. Abraham, a group of obviously evolved non-physical teachers, speak their broader perspective through Esther, and as they speak to our level of comprehension through a series of loving, allowing, brilliant, yet comprehensively simple essays in print and in sound, They guide us to a clear connection with our loving, guiding inner being and to uplifting self-empowerment from our total self. Featuring the universal law of attraction, the Hickses have now published more than 800 Abraham Hicks books, cassettes, CDs, and DVDs. They may be contacted through their extensive interactive website at www.abraham-hicks.com or by mail at Abraham Hicks Publications, Post Office Box 690-070, San Antonio, Texas. And the zip code is 78269.